CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the CoinWorld Podcast. I'm Jeff Stark.
And I'm Larry Jewett. It's always great to hear that voice that says recording in progress. It's a canned voice. But nonetheless, it just lets me know that we are back ready for more here at the CoinWorld Podcast. And we appreciate the fact that since you're hearing these words, you must be listening to us. We appreciate the fact that you are indeed listening. We welcome you in, and we welcome your suggestions too, as you can pass along. So we've had some recent mail. Great to have that. We've had some folks reach out and talk to us a little bit. And, you know, we're just glad to have this opportunity to kind of riff about what's going on in the numismatic world. There's a lot of stuff that's happening out there, a lot of which are covered on the pages of the CoinWorld magazine. So I hope that you're a subscriber to that as well as a subscriber to the podcast here. I know, Jeff, you've been out there beating the bushes. In fact, you've even put miles on. So we're glad to be back here in our respective home studios to talk about all of the things going on in the numismatic world.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, I took a little trip back to the home office, company headquarters in Ohio, and last week, and that was why there was no episode. But I'm back, and we are back now, and we get to talk about the numismatic scene. I think, I'll get to a question supplied to us in a bit, but I'm throwing you a curveball here and mention that, there's something really cool that just came out, and I think it's hitting the market in the last few days, coming from Dempsey and Baxter, a really neat concept where they have silver dollars coming from, and other coins, actually, I think Buffalo Nickels and Walker Halves and maybe a few others, that come with a piece of the original bag that the coin was contained in, and that piece, that fabric, is part of the grading label that just debuted earlier this week, and that has caught fire. It's a really cool thing. I'm amazed. It's one of those, oh my gosh, that's so obvious type things, especially somebody like myself who I don't collect and I don't pursue this area, but I look at sports cards and see what all are being done in that arena, and there's so many jersey patch baseball cards with pieces of the uniform intact, embedded, if you will, and this was a really cool thing that came out, and I hear it's been popular on Whatnot from certain channels, so definitely be looking for that in the market. That's kind of fun development this week, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree with that, because I was able to see that as NGC put out a little notice about that, and then I went to the Dempsey and Baxter site and saw the great coins that they have. I mean, that's just some of the great coins that they have, and I know that they're going to be at the Whitman Expo in Baltimore, and I'm sure that they'll be getting plenty of attention for that at that show that's happening beginning on the 21st. Actually started just a day ago, so if you happen to be in the Baltimore area, we invite you to check out the Whitman Expo, and of course, make your plans. I know that hopefully, Jeff, you've booked your plans, because, you know, this time last year reminded me that we were talking about the Central States Numismatic Society Convention and how you weren't going to be there, and then lo and behold, you showed up. Well, we're not going to have that kind of mystery this year. I'm demanding that you make an appearance at the Central States Numismatic Society's convention beginning on March the or May the 2nd. You don't have to be there May 1st if you don't want to, but May the 2nd through the 4th is the time for the Central States Convention up in Schaumburg, Illinois. So hopefully we're both going to be there. I've made my plans to be there, and it's going to be good to get back out there and see folks once again. Especially, they're going to do some very special things this year. I know that we just got word about the Newman Numismatic Portal going to be there. We got word earlier about how this is kind of a salute to Iowa. So great idea, great concepts. Dennis Tucker is going to be getting his Q. David Bowers Award in May. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of great things happening. We invite you to come on and see that. We got a conversation with convention manager Cindy Wibker coming up here later on this week. So I'll find out a little bit more about what's going to be going on in Schaumburg. But the best way to experience it, obviously, is to be there. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I think this is the universe telling me I have enough books, because my presence at Schaumburg means that I will not be able to attend the Greater St. Louis Book Fair. So I hope those folks who can attend get the good deals that I would snap up if, you know, since I won't be there. But I get to go to a coin show and I get to see you for the first time in ages. So
it's been a while. Yeah. So, but, yeah, you know, speaking of, you know, we talked about Baltimore and the Whitman Expo. One of the other exhibitors there is Olevian Numismatic Rarities. And we just got a note from Dane a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact, that if you're looking for an opportunity in numismatics, these folks in Pittsburgh, and if you have a chance, you got to stop by their Shadyside location where the retail gallery is. And, you know, we were in Pittsburgh recently, but they've got an opening for a position. It's a career opportunity for a business data administrator. Now, I could read you the position overview or anything like that, but if you're qualified and you'd like to get involved with a top-notch organization that's committed to numismatics, I suggest you reach out to the folks at Olevian and find out more information about this opportunity, where you can expand your own personal knowledge and be a an asset to those who are looking to it if you want to get involved in the quality side of things. So just reach out to those folks in Pittsburgh, their website, onrcoins.com. And then you can find out more information. But I just think it's great when we have the chance to allow the word out there about an opportunity that opens itself up for your numismatic situation. You actually got a message recently from an individual who might be able to help us in the future. And that's where, you know, we're always looking for to actually to bolster our staff. We've got a lot of great people already. It's now more about quantity as much as it is quality. It's always been about quality, but now we're going to start adding some folks to the roster. I mean, even the Mint's looking at adding because you'll find out later on this week that they've added to the roster of the Artistic Infusion program substantially, as a matter of fact, thanks to the heads up work of our colleague Paul Jokes. So again, a lot of things going on in the world of numismatics, and that's what we're here to talk about.
So thanks for pointing out that ONR coin thing. Unfortunately, not unfortunately, I checked and lo and behold, it's above my pay grade.
Well, so, I mean, it's just a case of, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I made sure that Dane set it up so it was just above the bar where you could reach right there so that we can keep you around on our staff, because you've got a lot of attributes that really help us out here. I mean, appreciate all that you've done by making your trips to New York and also across to Berlin. And that's why it's going to be good to sit down and kind of brainstorm with you and get some ideas that we can translate into the pages of Coin World. And also working on, I know you've been really busy even catching up with some of the folks from New York and Berlin as we're trying to line up some more podcast guests with another recording tentatively scheduled for next week. So, I mean, it's looking good right now. So we're hurtling through the month of March.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. We're already into spring already. And as you know, Baltimore is happening, has been happening. We've got Central States coming up. You know, Central States is going to be a good chance for anyone who's listening to track Larry and I down on the show floor. I want to add, we got a letter, I got a letter, an email on Friday last week, and I want to leave this up to the audience to help answer because it's a perplexing one. The writer asks or says, "Good day. If possible, could you recommend a coin catalog software that is compatible with my iPhone? My present software is only compatible with PC, and I need to migrate soon from the PC. Thank you, longtime subscriber." I'm withholding the name for now because I didn't know. I didn't tell him that, and it is a him that I would be mentioned on the podcast. I know there are a couple programs that we see advertised in the page of the Coin World and elsewhere, other publications. I myself don't use any particular software. I know some people just use Excel, and I believe that is accessible through your iPhone, just as long as you have a Microsoft subscription, right? But this is a vexing thing. There are several apps that people can use, whether that's CoinWorld Plus, whether that's I don't know if Numista has an app, but they certainly have the website and you can track your stuff there. Our friend and former guest Don at World Coin Gallery has a way for you to track your collection there. But there's got to be some other things out there. I just imagine. And I know, we just had Miko from Coiniverse. That's sort of a way to do it, but they still have a lot of coins to add to get to that broad. Anybody can focus on US coins, but when you open it up to world coins, there's just the volume is so massive, and the number of coins coming out every year is just. It takes my breath away. I can't keep up as far as all the emails I get every day with stuff. And I'm only seeing, I don't know, half of the stuff that's coming out in the world. There's so much coming out in South and Central America, in certain parts of Asia, and all the Middle East and Africa that we're just, there aren't the defined distribution networks for. There aren't the I can remember looking back and in the back issues of Coin World doing research for stories. Certainly when we look for This Week in Coin World History, some of the advertisers that existed in the 60s and 70s that were creating markets for new issues, and they just aren't, they don't exist now, but the coins are still entering the marketplace. You just have a diffusion, folks that are selling only on social media or selling on eBay, or they have their own website, and it's just an enormous task to try to be aware of all that stuff. And so I can't imagine that any catalog truly can encompass all of that without some lag. And in the absence of updates now these days to the standard catalog of world coins, as of the last few years ago, and that whole disruption with the sale of the properties and the company, being split and all that, there really is a gap in the marketplace. I wonder what our listeners have experienced, and if there's any, if you can weigh in, listeners, by all means, send us a note.
Yes, definitely. I mean, and that's a great source too, because you always, I mean, it's like going to reviews on websites, and oh, should I try this restaurant? You're going to see, what people think. And it's just like sometimes you rely on the opinions of others, and that's what we need to have here because, good, bad, or ugly, you need to know what you're getting yourself into. And if we can utilize our audience to help this listener and subscriber to achieve the end that he wants, then that's even better. I mean, our job is to educate and inform, and that is another way that we can do that here. But we're not the ones who necessarily have to supply all the answers. The answers can be supplied by those who have had the experience, and we can share the experience. That was one of the topics of a recent editorial, is how it's great that this hobby is known for having individuals who have the knowledge, but they're willing to share the knowledge. They're willing to assist somebody, you know, go along in their own pursuit here. And what's even better is the fact that even when you think you know everything, well, then there's more stuff coming. And that's the case here, where there may be some products in development out there that we yet to find out about. There may be, you know, it's a fast moving world out there. You definitely, things are happening and happening quickly. And certainly keeping your ears to the ground and finding out all the things that are happening out there that might be advantageous to you, no matter what type of service you're looking for here. But above all else, be diligent, be very vigilant as well, and see what's going on here, because you know, sometimes the intentions of some would be to be more profit-minded than service-minded. And that's not to cast doubt on anything that's out there, but just sometimes you have to be very precise in what you're trying to achieve. And that's very important. So hopefully we can get some kind of answers here and pass them along as quickly as we can.
Absolutely. And in a few minutes, I'm going to get an answer from you, I hope.
No, you're going to get a I don't know from me. So,
but before we can get to that, I think it's time that we explore this week in numismatic history. I often land on two things, and the first one, I think the more interesting or important one, this week happened on March 22nd, 1915. That was when then Treasury Secretary William G. McAdoo approved the designs for the 1915 S Panama Pacific International Exposition half dollars. The Pan Pac series itself is really a fun series, because you have the $50 denomination gold coins, both octagonal and round. Those are fun, but even the half dollar is just a gorgeous, gorgeous coin. It's one of those, like, I don't own it, but it's a piece I covet, right? You know, it's a really cool design with the rising sun, and you have the eagle on the back. It's Charles Barber, George Morgan, famous designers. It's just a cool coin. There's what a cherub holding some flowers or something, and Lady Liberty, or it's, if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. That's fun. And that happened on March 22nd, 1915. I also couldn't pass up the chance to make reference to something with a numismatic tie to Missouri, and that was on March 21, 1863, when the state of Missouri funds signing, numbering, and registering Union military bonds. That makes me want to know more, and I wonder, you know, I certainly have, I think it's the Whitman book on Southern States currency, but it makes me want to bid on the auction right now from Heritage. They have a bunch of research files from Eric P. Newman, and I was sad to see that bidding had already topped $1,000 for his paper money research for the paper money of Missouri. And I'm still contemplating, is it too much to jump in there? There's actually two different files, two different lots of this, and it's interesting to see some of these lots in this auction. There's no bids, or there's a $30 bid, or you know, current bid $6, $1. It's crazy, and there's somebody else out there who likes Missouri numismatics, and these are bid up really, really high. So I'm hoping if I don't get them, they at least land in good hands, and maybe somebody would let me paw through them and drool all over them with promising not to get the paper wet. So that's this week in numismatic history.
And the reason why I wasn't quick to respond to you here, I'm presently trying to research how much I can get that for, because I know your birthday's coming up soon. So we'll have to figure out what we can do here. There are some things that are in my price range, but there are quite a few things that aren't in my price range, but the aforementioned that you had, good heavens. I mean, it's Eric P. Newman. Think about this. I mean, the universal appeal is tremendous. I mean, just to have something, you always talk about provenance. Wow. You know, that would be something right there. So yeah, I'm going to keep that open so I can see what actually happens. There are some bids on there that that's phenomenally low with 5 days left. So we'll see.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, it's not wise of a bidder to tip their hand and say, I want to bid on this, but I'm almost at this point out, you know, it's just, it's too much, but really it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I think about there's such a, it seems like there's several of those every year. And it's hard to be capitalized to take advantage of all those opportunities when they arise. So we'll see how things go. By the time we do the next episode, I'll have some clarity on that situation. But in the meantime, I want to look at this week in coin world history. Random number generator came up with 2001 as the first response. So we are looking at the March 19th, 2001 issue. There's two stories on the front page that offer lessons. One of them is a smaller headline. It's just titled Seventh Mule Brings $48,000. This was a story from our colleague Paul about a Sacagawea and state quarter dollar mule, a mule being the term for coins struck from dies that are not intended to be paired together. In this case, this was the seventh specimen authenticated of such type, and it was sold to collector Tommy Bolak for $48,000. That is the second highest price reported to have been paid for any of the seven authenticated specimens. Now, hop in your magical time machine. This was as of, you know, March 2001. More are known today, but what's also known is that Bolak has almost all of them. Whenever these pieces come to the market, he snaps them up. The article describes him as a type collector of United States and world coins, paper money, and errors. What we don't know, or at least I don't know, Paul may know, is what else he collects. You know, he doesn't only collect these mule errors, but darn it if he doesn't have about all of them. And it's interesting, you know, to think about what does that do to the value when one person sort of corners the market, and for those to have that later value, there has to be, you know, you got to have two bidders to bid something up, and a, you know, even better if you have more bidders. So this was a fun story, though, thinking about that little segment of the market, the you know, the Sacagawea dollar. Had we not had the Sacagawea dollar, we wouldn't have the mules. And it's, you know, why do they exist? Nobody knows. That's also the tale that the other story on that page that I want to highlight shows. This story says, after more than 30 years, collector relates rare find, 1943 cent struck on foreign coin blank. This is a 1943 Lincoln cent that was struck on a planchet intended for a coin from Curacao, which was struck under contract by the U.S. Mint during World War II. It was found in circulation. The buyer of this coin purchased it for 1 cent in the mid-1960s. The coin was actually featured in an August 31st, 1966 issue of Coin World in the Collector's Clearinghouse column. And it came up at auction through Heritage in 2001. You know, it's not that copper 1943 cent that might be the topic of so many videos on YouTube and TikTok, and, you know, the hysteria, the mania of some websites that say, you know, this coin is worth $1 million and all that stuff that's driving people crazy. Certainly from a dealer side, everybody calling them up saying, hey, I've got the rare thing, and it's not at all. This was actually legitimate. Cent coin struck on a silver planchet. It's it looks different enough that you go, oh, this is not what it's supposed to be, but it's not steel. And apparently the coin had been coated with mercury, which was boiled off by an industrial laboratory in Jacksonville, Florida. So, and it's very interesting just to see how little by little these finds enter the marketplace, and over time you get to understand a larger story through their discovery.
Yeah, it's interesting too that, I mean, when you made mention about the dealers getting inundated with all the different hey, I've got one of these, and just read a story about a oh, here's a I paid big money for a no mint mark coin, and it's like there was a period of time when we didn't put a P mint mark on people, and you know, it's just like, oh my goodness. You know, no matter how many times all the organizations and dealers and Coin World and all the other numismatic publications try, somebody out there who's not in numismatics gets wind of something and sometimes gets swindled. And it's a shame when that happens. But the legitimate examples, you know, all get tarnished by this, and it irritates me to no end. So, yeah, it's just hearing stories and. Come on, people. Let's education. Education is a great way to learn. So, I'm going to go to the letters page now, and there are a lot of good letters back on the March 19, 2001 issue. One of those, actually, I'm going to pick out on three of them here today. One of them says, "New collector, my name is Lauren. I'm 8 years old. My dad collects coins. I like looking at his coins. He brings me home rolls of pennies every week. Good man. Recently, we found an 1857 Flying Eagle cent. My dad said it's in good condition. That's fine. Still, it's a great coin. We also found an 1863 Indian head penny. Dad says it's in very good condition. We were also very excited. Even my mom started looking through the pennies. This makes me want to try and get all the world's popular coins." And that's from Lauren Beaver from North Little Rock, Arkansas. And of course, this letter has a little age to it. I hope that Lauren continued to have that kind of enthusiasm that she exhibited at the age of 8. Another letter in the page says, "Terrible quality." And they're not talking about our stories, fortunately. "I was one of many who purchased the 2001 New York quarters directly from the mint. I bought a 100 coin bag of each mint mark. I was terribly disappointed in the quality of the Philadelphia minted quarters. Over half of them looked like they'd been run through a meat grinder before they were bagged. The coins had deep cuts on the obverse, mostly to the right of Washington's head. I would think that the mint could do a better job with more than 200 years' experience in making coins." And that was from George Mooney, or rather George Moody. His address was withheld. Final letter is "Different tactics" with a question mark. The letter starts out, "I have noticed many people think the dollar coin isn't going to work. So far, they have evidence on their side, but I think it's going to take some time and some different tactics. I run a vending business. My machines accept the dollar coins. These coins will always work, even when the dollar bill will not. All of us have had machines reject our dollar bills, but the machines never reject the dollar coin. Furthermore, the changers I use give out dollar coins for $1, $5, $10, and $20 bills. The customers use them regularly, and most of the coins are actually used, I'd say about 70%. Initially, people were keeping coins, but now they quickly began using them on a regular basis when it was obvious how well they worked. I spend the dollar coins all the time. There is no problem with acceptance, but they do not give them back in change. I frequently ask about this, but they say they're all sent to the bank. If Safeway and Walmart gave out only dollar coins and sent the dollar bills back to the bank, then you would finally see some habits change." That letter comes from Steve Patterson of Erie, Colorado. So there you have it. I mean, it's all about the utilization. You think about the $2 bill was a lot of the same situation there, where people, you know, would hold on to them for a while, and then very seldom do you see one out there anymore. But they're still making them by the millions. So.
So that's actually a timely thing because while I was in Ohio, my friends with whom I stayed said, "Oh, we have several coins for you to look at and tell us if they're worth anything." And a couple of them were silver dollars, and I bought them at a fair market rate, and they were just common, any old date silver dollars. But they had my friend said, "We have these quarters for you. They look really funny." And I looked at them, picked them up, and oh, lo and behold, they're two presidential dollars. So,
Ah.
and I did not buy them. I said they should just be spent or taken to the bank. Maybe I could have bought them and spent them, but it's the pleasure of surprising somebody with it at a drive-through at a wherever you're it's almost not worth the hassle because then no, that's a dollar. It's people confuse it and all that, and even as my friends did. So anyway, I bet that you're probably confused by the question last week.
Not just the question last week. I mean, the fact that it wasn't one last week, but last
Well, the
time. Yeah.
last
Ha!
episode, you know what I
Gotcha.
mean.
Yeah, I know what you meant.
So we were talk we talked to James Morris of CIT, so I wanted to ask a question about a coin that CIT struck, and it's one of my favorites. I don't own it, but it's always a neat one to see, and I've written about it before when it came up at auction several years ago. It's a 1988 50 lek, I believe is how you pronounce it, from Albania, and it celebrates the railroad. It's got a train on it, but what makes it distinguishable or different? And I will say, the coin received the Coin of the Year award, so that's not the answer I'm looking for. There's something else about it, and it's a toughie. It would be expert level question in the Coin World trivia game. What is your answer?
It's not, obviously not because it's like almost three dimensional or has a higher relief on it than some of the others. So I'm not really sure. I mean, the coin itself is beautiful. I totally agree with that. But I'm not sure what it is that, you're looking for on this one. But, it's kind of redundant to say a CIT coin is beautiful. I mean, there's no question. I mean, I'm partial to the meteors, partial to the Tiffany or the river going through Paris.
Yeah,
Partial
that's a Tiffany
to
series.
that's what I thought, the Tiffany series there. I mean, I've loved the steampunk series that they've done, just like there's just so much that I really enjoy. I remember looking at some of the mountains in the series that they've had, but I'm not real sure where the 88 train fits into all this that you're asking about. So I'm going to plead ignorance and live with that.
You'll have to look close, but in the right light, you can see that the tunnel from whence the train is traveling in the design is actually a hole in the planchet. It's
Oh.
intentionally built to have a hole in it, and that's not the first coin that has a hole in it. My gosh, there's ancient Chinese cash coins have holes in the center, but the use of that hole, it's not a pure round shape, it's not a square shape. It definitely adds something artistically to the coin, and it makes it really fun. And there's actually I believe, a copper nickel version, a lower denomination, that does not have the hole in it. But this one is the larger. I want to say it's like a 5 ounce silver, but I could be wrong. It's certainly like a maybe 65 millimeter size. Anyway, it's a big one.
Yeah, well,
So.
this, I mean, the idea of using all that you can do to make it, intentional design elements there, I mean, separates it from everything else. I got all kinds of coins with holes in them. They weren't put there by the mint, but still, just the idea that this one was intentional, and that makes it even more. And that's why, when I mentioned the meteor, the fact that a little piece of meteor appears in the edge of some of the coins, that, I mean, that's intentional. So that's really great to utilize the real estate that's offered, and a lot of times the edge is overlooked, but in this case they didn't overlook it. So that's just hats off to CIT for what they're doing.
Absolutely. Now, real quick, before we go, I have to ask you the question for next week. And, you know, I can't help but think we've been a lot of focus on the coins for 2026, the nation's 250th anniversary. We're going all the way back to 1826, the 50th anniversary. The U.S. Mint struck only one silver coin dated in 1826. What was the denomination? This is Coin World Trivia Game expert level question. You have a week to think about that before the next show. With that, I will wish everyone adieu and good luck. In the meantime, happy hunting at the Baltimore show. And of course, anything you want to add here in the closing seconds, and I do mean seconds.
It's over.
All right. Until next time, happy collecting.
Happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about Coin World Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.